WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
We want to welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host is District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. We appreciate WGNS airing this broadcast, and we thank you for listening. During today's broadcast, domestic violence will take center stage. Domestic violence is a serious problem in the United States, the state of Tennessee, and in our community. On today's Trials from the Past segment, and for most of the program, we will highlight the domestic violence problem. After today's broadcast, I hope our listeners will feel motivated to ask our elected representatives to look for ways to offer more protection to the victims of domestic violence. Today's Trial from the Past focuses on a murder that occurred in Laverne, Tennessee. It is a domestic violence murder. It is a very tragic story, and you may find some of the facts of this case very disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Joining us to discuss the murder of Robin Coulter will be Sergeant Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department. Also on today's broadcast will be Rutherford County Deputy Court Clerk Robin Gentry. Robin will tell us about grand jury action since our last broadcast. She will tell us about upcoming trials, and she will give the listeners information about court costs in a criminal case. What is it, who pays it, and where does it go? And during the Look at the Law segment, General Weitzel will have a guest. Attorney Mitch Shannon will be here to discuss orders of protection. And in the final segment of the program, we will ask all of the listeners to help solve a mystery. Law enforcement will be asking for your help in determining who killed a woman who remains unidentified. Jane Doe was murdered over 6 years ago in 2007. Her body was found in the woods off of Hollandale Drive in Laverne, Tennessee. Telling us about the Jane Doe murder will be Sergeant Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department. We welcome you to the program, and we thank you for listening, and we ask for your help in seeking justice. We will begin the broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Have you been getting most of your money advice from your brother-in-law? Maybe you need Dave Ramsey.
The Dave Ramsey Show, 1 to 4 on WGNS, Rutherford County's place to talk.
Jones Automatic Car Wash uses only microfiber towels to dry your car.
There's absolutely no lint any place on the car.
Only microfiber towels touch your car at Jones Car Wash.
Now with this microfiber towel we're using to do the windows and dry the car off, there's absolutely no lint. It just adds a little more quality to what we're trying to do.
That's Palmer Jones.
We appreciate you coming in, so thank you so much and have a good day.
Only Microsoft towels at Jones Car Wash on Memorial across from O'Charley's.
This is Dave Kivenimi at Music World and Drummer's Den. We offer DJ service and also have our own store live band playing R&B, classic rock, some great dance tunes. So for any of your music needs, DJ, a live band, give us a call. We're here for you. This is Dave Kivenimi at Music World and Drummer's Den. DJ, a live band, Music World and Drummer's Den. South Church across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
Hello, this is Peter Demas with Demas' Restaurant, a family restaurant tradition for four generations, now in our 24th year, serving our most popular menu item, great-tasting oven-baked chicken soup. Back in 1989, when my mom and dad were planning Demas's, they debated whether baked chicken soup should even be on the menu. Both agreed that it was a good item, but they weren't sure it would be accepted. Because my dad and his sisters had eaten it all of their lives, especially when anybody had a bad cold, they decided to risk it. They did it, and now I can say the rest is history. We made over 65,000 gallons last year and make more every day. We sell it by the cup, bowl, quart, or gallon, You can even freeze it for shipping or to save it for a later date. Give yourself a treat today. Baked chicken soup, buy it in the store, or get it to go. Demas' Restaurant in Murfreesboro, Lebanon, downtown Nashville, and Hendersonville. Get your chicken soup today.
From call to conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
This trial was about Larry Calder, Robin Calder, and how domestic violence destroyed both of their lives. At the time of the murder, the Calders had been married for approximately 2 years. There were no children from the marriage. Both of the Calders were employed. Larry Calder was a security guard. He was approved to carry a .38 caliber revolver and was qualified as a sharpshooter. According to co-workers, Larry Calder appeared to be very bitter about his wife and their relationship. He frequently referred to her in very derogatory terms. Co-workers heard Larry Calder say things like, "If she tries to take my trailer, I'll kill her." On another occasion, Larry Calder reportedly said, "I think I'll just go on and kill her." One co-worker was so troubled by what Larry Calder was saying that he visited Robin Calder at her workplace and told her about the threats. Robin Calder was employed as a clerk at the Pantry Market in Laverne. Witnesses testified that the Calders communicated primarily through notes and letters. A co-worker of Robin Calder also testified that shortly before the murder, Robin Calder asked for her assistance in moving. On December the 2nd, 1997, Robin Calder signed a lease for an apartment. The day before that, on December 1st, 1997, Ms. Calder sought assistance from the domestic violence program. She obtained an order of protection against Larry Calder. In the early afternoon of December 3rd, 1997, Deputy Whit Davis served Larry Calder with the order of protection. Later that day, at 6:30 p.m., Larry Calder walked into the lobby of the Laverne Police Department and told dispatcher Cassandra Lowry that he had just killed his wife. Detectives go immediately to the Calder home and find Robin Calder in her bed, shot to death. A .38 caliber revolver is found on the kitchen table. Larry Calder is interviewed by detectives. He admitted that prior to the murder, he and his wife were experiencing marital difficulties. He said that 1 year prior to the murder, his wife had informed him that she no longer loved him. He went on to say that Robin repeatedly told him of her intention to leave. And she also informed him that she would obtain a restraining order against him when she moved. He also said that on December 3rd, while Ms. Calder was at work, a police officer served him with the order of protection. Larry Calder said a short time after being served, he fell asleep until 5:30 p.m. When he woke up, Robin had returned home. He confronted her about the order of protection. After a short argument, Robin Calder went to her bedroom and she fell asleep. Larry Calder then goes to his bedroom. He opens his closet and gets his gun. A short time later, he grabs a pillow from his bed and walks into Robin's bedroom. He places the pillow over her head as she sleeps and fires the gun. He hears Robin scream, and he shoots her a second time. These facts were presented to the Rutherford County jury in Judge Steve Daniels' court. The jury returned a verdict of guilty to murder in the first degree. Larry Calder was sentenced to life imprisonment in the Tennessee Department of Corrections. To discuss this case, we welcome Sergeant Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department. Welcome, Detective Sergeant Hayes.
Thank you. Good morning.
And I called you Detective Sergeant. You've been an officer, a detective, and a sergeant. Right now, you're currently a sergeant. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, Would you agree with me that domestic violence is a very serious problem, not only in this county, but throughout this nation?
It is a very serious problem, one that we need to pay more attention to and try to get more information out to the public as far as the dangers that they can face on a day-to-day basis due to domestic situations.
General Weitzel and myself prosecuted this case, and I remember in preparing for the case interviewing Ramona Thomas, an officer with the Laverne Police Department who had become a friend with Robin Coulter prior to this murder. And I understand that Officer Thomas heard the order of protection being served over the radio, and that she went to the pantry and warned Robin, hey, this is a dangerous time. When an order of protection is served, is that generally a dangerous time?
It is, due to the fact that when an order of protection is served, it's because there is a threat of danger to the person from the person that's being served against. When the order is served, it tends to lend itself to create an atmosphere where more violence could be, or additional violence could occur, because it would actually anger the person that the order of protection was served against.
Now, as I further understand it, Officer Thomas also, because she was friends of her, she said, why don't you come and spend the evening or night with me, because this is a time that you should be concerned, and that the victim in this case declined, thinking that she didn't believe anything would really happen. How important is it for the victims to take this situation very, very seriously and realize that you need to be with somebody or have somebody with you at your home when you're going through these processes?
It is very serious. You have to make sure that your safety is the number one priority. Whether that is to stay with someone, either at the location you're currently at, find a friend or a relative or a loved one in another city, somewhere that you can get away from the location, isolate yourself, and try to make your environment as safe as it can be until things get worked out.
Now, we know that you're a very experienced officer. You've been in law enforcement several years. How important have you determined it to be that at the first instance of domestic violence that it's reported, and efforts are made to try to curb it at the very beginning?
You have to start at the beginning. Generally speaking, in these situations on domestic incidents, it'll start out on a smaller scale. You have to report it then and get law enforcement involved, get the community involved as far as the assistance that you can get from the community with, whether it be through church groups or domestic violence programs, support groups, things of that nature, to keep the problem from escalating, because it's generally speaking, when it starts out small, if there's not an effort made to correct the problem, it will continue and has a propensity to get worse as time goes.
If a victim of domestic violence is attempting to leave the home and move, for instance, to her apartment like she was trying to do, would the police department be willing to come out during that period of time where she's trying to get out her last remaining belongings and make sure that nothing happens while the move is taking place?
Yes, sir. Any of your local law enforcement would be willing to come and stand by to keep peace as best as possible and make sure that everything transpires in a safe environment to keep anyone from getting hurt further.
This was a very tragic case, and we appreciate the fact that the Laverne Police Department dealt with this and was able to obtain a conviction and was able to send a message that domestic violence should not be tolerated in this community. We want to thank you for coming in for this program. You're going to be a guest in a later segment, and we'll move on after these messages.
The Salvation Army Family Store, where your purchases always help us help others. Get 50% off items marked with our color of the week. Every Wednesday, get 50% off most items in the store. At the Salvation Army Family Store, you can get bargain prices on clothes, furniture, household goods, electronics, and more. Your purchases go directly to fund Salvation Army programs here in Rutherford County. The Salvation Army Family Store is at 125 South Front Street, across from Captain D's on Broad. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street, across from Toots.
I'm Greg Tidwell.
And I'm Lisa Halliburton. Bell Jewelers welcomes you.
What you can expect at Bell Jewelers, free estimates on all clock, watch, pocket watch, and jewelry repair, free jewelry cleaning, and prong check while you wait.
Bell Jewelers, the current leader in jewelry trends and in-house jewelry and watch repair.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street, across from Toots.
Bell Jewelers, family-owned and operated since 1879.
Weather Eye.
We'll see sunny skies here this afternoon, a high in the mid-50s, and winds out of the northwest of 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, partly cloudy skies and a low around 39. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 37.
If you are looking for a place to get well before returning home or to assisted living, look no further than Northside Healthcare Nursing and Rehabilitation Center.
If you're not quite ready to go home, you can come and actually get all the attention that you need while you progress to where you can go home.
Residents can make the most of their time at Northside.
Love it all. I never have met a nicer people than right here.
Get well, live well at Northside Healthcare on East MTCS Drive beside Middle Tennessee Christian School.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
We want to welcome to the program at this time Robin Gentry, the Deputy Circuit Court Clerk for Rutherford County. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
And as you're well aware, we started the week with a little weather problem. We had grand jury scheduled for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, canceled Monday, but we did finish business on Wednesday. And if you would, share with us how many cases were indicted by the Rutherford County Grand Jury this month.
We had 188 cases to come out this month. Of that, there were 136 felonies and 52 misdemeanors.
And if you would, we want to talk about some cases of note that are upcoming. And we start by saying that none of the defendants that are named in any of this month's indictments or the upcoming trials have been convicted, and of course they are presumed by our law to be innocent. But with that in mind, tell us about any significant cases that were indicted by the grand jury this month.
Well, we had a murder to come out. The defendant's name is Michael Tusey. He was indicted and charged with the first-degree murder of Ellis Wayne Smith. Mr. Tusey is scheduled to be arraigned in Judge Bragg's court on March the 17th.
All right. Can you tell us about any noteworthy trials or other events coming up in the next few months?
Yes, sir. On May the 5th, we have the trial of Brandon Buchanan. He's charged with the first-degree murder of Bruce Thomas. That's going to be tried before Judge Siskin. On June the 16th, we have the trial of Jacob Perriman. It had previously been scheduled for early spring, and it's been continued. It's going to be, like I said, tried on June the 16th, to begin on June the 16th, and he's charged with the first-degree murder of his wife and the aggravated assault of her 7-year-old son, and that will be tried before Judge Bragg. June 30th, Mr. Moses Bess, he's charged with first-degree murder of his wife in 1986. This will be tried by Judge Bragg. August the 11th, we will have the trial of Aaron Walker, and he's charged with the first-degree murder of Kevin Barrett, who was employed by the Rutherford County Board of Education. That will be tried before Judge Bragg.
All right. Looks like, as usual, we've got a busy few months ahead. Robin, if you would, tell us what is involved in court costs, how the court costs are calculated, and where that money is designated to go.
You know, it's funny because a lot of the defendants think we just bring these fees out of thin air, it's all mandated and by statute. There's, of course, clerk's fees. There's arrest fees for arresting agencies, various state and county litigation taxes, and depending on the charge or the conviction, there's different mandated fees associated with those charges, such as DUIs or sex crimes or such of that nature.
And
really, these fees are designed to help finance the court system, the various employees, for instance, in the clerk's office, and also other things that are necessary to keep the criminal justice system running.
Right. Like in DUIs, there's fees for the Department of Safety. The fines that are associated with that, part of that goes to the Department of Safety. Drug convictions. There's fines for the drug charges. Those will go back to the arresting agency for their drug fund. And it's our responsibility to collect those fees and get them to those agencies.
Well, again, Jay Paul and I want to thank you for being part of the program this month. And also thank all the people that work in the clerk's office, especially in the criminal division, where we tend to have more business. And we'll look forward to seeing you next month.
Thank you. You guys have a good day.
The Truman Show on WGNS.
Rutherford County, we're going to have a great show today.
Truman Jones is on weekday mornings at 9 on WGNS.
Murfreesboro Collision Center, serving Rutherford County since 1989. Get a free estimate on your fender bender today.
Hi, I'm David Ward. Here at Murfreesboro Collision Center, we use OEM parts to bring your car back to OEM specs.
Murfreesboro Collision Center has a long tradition of serving local residents.
At Murfreesboro Collision Center, the average repair usually takes less than 3 days.
Murfreesboro Collision Center, on Broad, at Northfield, behind Ford of Murfreesboro.
That update brought to you by Account Temps, providing businesses flexible staffing solutions for all their accounting and finance workload needs. Learn more at accounttemps.com/flexible staffing, a Robert Half company.
Stay ahead of severe weather. Get breaking news and local sports scores first. This is Jenny Williams at Gill's Ace Hardware in Smyrna. We sponsor text alerts from WGNSradio.com. Look for the sign-up link on the homepage. It's a free service.
Aloha, this is Omni Hut.
Visiting with Polly Walls at the Omni Hut, open Tuesday through Saturday for dinner.
We have got a great customer base, and some folks only come for special occasions, and then we have folks that come weekly. We see A to Z. We've learned to stay with the same recipes. Start from scratch, fresh kitchen.
Catch the Aloha spirit at the Omni Hut.
Come see us at 618 South Lowry Street, just inside Smyrna, near Nissan.
This is Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station, FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, WGNS, Murfreesboro. What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Paul, before we start our next segment, I noticed when we walked in this morning there's two big glazed donuts up here on the counter with our name on them, so to speak. And so I want to thank Officer Terry Spence of the Murfreesboro Police Department for helping widen my belt line. But I saw him, I guess it was Tuesday, and I appreciate his thoughtfulness. We want to welcome Mitch Shannon to the program today. Mitch is a local attorney, practices law and been practicing law. How long have you been practicing law here in Rutherford County, Mitch?
I got my license in 2001 and practiced with Larry Trail, and then went for about 4 years and then went out on my own.
And one of the things that your law practice involves you in is assisting the Rutherford County Domestic Violence Program. So if you would, tell us a little bit about what you do and the duties and responsibilities you share with them.
Well, I started working with the Domestic Violence Program about 7 years ago. I did a lot of consulting with them, and then they asked me to join their staff. So actually, the Domestic Violence Program is a client of mine. I'm their staff attorney, and I take all cases that they have, and if the victims are unrepresented, I represent them in court. Domestic Violence Court is on Monday. And then on Thursdays, we have interviews, and we discuss their cases, and we plan for trials.
Now, when we talk about domestic violence court, the court that you attend on Monday, That is not a criminal proceeding, but is civil in nature and deals with orders of protection. And if you would take a few minutes and tell us what an order of protection is, what it's designed to do, and what effect it has in domestic violence cases.
You're absolutely right. An order of protection is a civil remedy. It's some people refer to it as a stay away order. It's more than that, but it is a civil remedy. Someone who needs an order of protection can go to the clerk's office, or they can go to the domestic violence program, and they can fill out the paperwork. If you come to the domestic violence program, and our offices are at 2106 East Main Street here in Murfreesboro, we'll help you with the paperwork. We'll help you draw it up. And then that paperwork is submitted to a judge, and he takes an initial look at it to see if there's enough reason to issue an order of protection, keeping the alleged abuser away from that person. That's issued, and then it's served by the police. They actually read that to them, and then they're required to stay away from the victim until their hearing. The hearing is held probably, I think, is required within 15 days of its issuance.
And, of course, at the hearing, both parties appear. As you've stated, you represent the victim. The person that's being served with the order of protection can also appear with counsel. And tell us what the purpose of the hearing is and what the court decides at that time.
The purpose of the hearing is to make the order of protection a permanent or a full order. When it's first issued by the judge, it's issued in what's called an ex parte form, which means only one person has had their say. The victim has said, I need an order of protection, here's why. But the alleged abuser hasn't had a chance to have his or her day in court, and so that's what the hearing is for. At the end of the hearing, if there is one, the judge makes a determination, and if the order of protection is issued, it's issued for a year.
And, of course, the court puts certain conditions in that, and it may even make conditions for if there are children involved for the support of the children or the arrangements regarding seeing the children and whatnot. And the order is really designed to hopefully make people stop and think before they act. And can you estimate for us how many cases might be heard on a particular Monday?
Sure. It's every Monday except for certain Mondays during the year. And we see anywhere between 20 and 30 cases of orders of protection every week.
And I guess, as you've described it, a stay-away order, I guess at times there are a lot of people, maybe a lot of married folks or boyfriends and girlfriends, that want the other one to stay away from them for one reason or another. But what is necessary in order for the court to intervene? Is it just that a couple of people are mad at each other and fussing, or does it take more?
It takes a whole lot more than that. Just because someone's mad at somebody doesn't get you an order of protection. You have to have a reasonable expectation of serious bodily injury or death. You have to be in fear, and that fear has to be easily and succinctly communicated to the court. So this is not for somebody who wants to get a hand up in a divorce. This is not for somebody who just wants somebody out of the house. This is for somebody who's in fear, someone who thinks that they are going to incur some kind of bodily harm.
Would it be a fair statement that in your 7 years experience that when a person obtains an order of protection through the court, or even without obtaining an order of protection, they are attempting to leave either the residence or leave the relationship. Is that the most dangerous time in abusive situations?
There's no question about that. What's happening when you take out an order of protection and when that's served is you're trying to get your life back. You're trying to get back control of your life as a victim. And that simply means that the abuser is losing control. And so that abuser is going to start pushing every button that he or she knows in order to get that control back. And we teach, when we interview and when we talk to people about orders of protection, we teach them about a safety plan. one of the things, you know, you were talking earlier about the Coulter case. One of the things that, the law has changed for is we can ask now with an order of protection to get immediate possession of that house. We can exclude people from the house so that they don't have to leave. But the other thing we do is we teach them a safety plan, the victims. And that says simply this: have a little suitcase in your trunk, have a change of clothes nearby, have a safety plan so that when you order protection is issued, here's what you do. You go and you don't look back. Most people, when they get killed, when they get injured, when they get severely beaten, it's when they go back. They've got to be ready to go, and that's why we have the shelter, and that's why we teach about safety plans.
And that's also the reason that, the court systems try to get involved at that point. And another thing that I want to talk about, in addition to the Rutherford County Domestic Violence Program that you're associated with, we also have another court domestic violence program that is active in the criminal courts, particularly the General Sessions courts, and I'm sure you're aware of that.
That's right. You have a great coordinator down in the criminal courts. Monique Tillage does a great job of coordinating the criminal cases and keeping records of the domestic violence cases in the Orders of Protection Court. And that special court is really a help to us, because we transfer and help give our information to them.
And quite frequently there is a criminal proceeding where someone has been charged with domestic assault, and going on coincidental at that time will be an order of protection proceeding in the civil court. And the two different branches share the information that they have, as I understand what you're saying.
That's right.
And I also know that there are victim assistance in the criminal court. Andrew Haisley is a special prosecutor from my office who handles domestic violence. Prior, Dana Minor was in that court for several years. So coordinating between the district attorney's office and the domestic violence program in criminal court and also the Rutherford County Domestic Violence Program, we're trying to make a difference and hopefully keep things from happening like happening in the Coulter case that we heard about earlier today.
I have a question for both of you, and what I'm going to ask you is, would both of y'all support legislation that would say that if someone kills someone in violation of an order of protection where the court has said you stay away from this person, you leave this person alone, that if they in fact kill that person, that would either automatically be qualified as first-degree murder or an aggravating circumstance for the death penalty? I guess General Weitzel, I'll ask you first.
Well, certainly, Paul. You know, you and I have had that conversation many times, and I'm trying to recall, I believe it was the first show that we were on the air, we discussed aggravating circumstances in capital cases and the factors that the legislature has deemed that qualifies a case to be a death penalty case. And we've said many times that once a court has stepped in and ordered someone to stay away, in other words, you have brought the legal system in to be a barrier and try to protect somebody, that if someone breaks that court order and it results in death, that it should be first-degree murder. And as you know, and Mitch, I know you know this, in our aggravated assault statutes, if someone is under an order of protection and they assault the person that order has been issued for them to stay away from, that raises it from simple assault to aggravated assault. So what you're talking about is carrying this on to the level of homicides to make it an aggravated circumstance for death penalty or an automatic first-degree murder case.
Mitch, do you have any input, or how do you feel about that?
You know, I agree 100%. And, you know, in an order of protection case, earlier I said that orders of protection were civil in nature, but they're actually quasi-criminal in nature, because just like General Weitzel said, as things ramp up when you disobey a court order, same thing with an order of protection. If you violate an order of protection, then it becomes a civil contempt issue punishable by time in jail, and you can extend your order of protection by 5 or 10 years. So I would support that as well.
Well, Mitch, we want to thank you for being here. I also want to say we appreciate all the work that Deborah Johnson and the people at the Domestic Violence Program have done over a number of years. The community has supported that program. They have a wonderful shelter. And I would ask everybody listening this morning to support the Domestic Violence Program with your time and especially with your money. It's a very valuable program. And hopefully, I know we don't know, we can't quantify it, but I am sure that we have saved people's lives as a result of that program. So thank you for being here this morning.
Consumer questions, money concerns, and more. This is Clark Howard, and I'll take your calls on Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Weekdays 11 to 1 on WGNS.
Stone River Manor is an assisted care living facility right here in Murfreesboro. We have assisted living facilities here for seniors as well as Alzheimer's and dementia care.
It gives my family peace of mind knowing I am well adjusted here with the food staff, maintenance department, cleaning personnel who really make us all feel so special and important to them.
Stones River Manor.
I am so fortunate. It's the best ever.
It's home.
Hello, my name is Gary McGuire. I'm the proprietor of Opossum's Pub. Come in and try us out.
Every single time my wife and I are here, whoever's sitting on my left or on my right, they're my best friend for the night, and it's just awesome.
It's just very creative and fresh, fresh ingredients.
Regulars here make up a lot of the atmosphere.
My name is Gary McGuire, and I approve this message.
Stop by Opossum's, located on Memorial Boulevard, opposite Sportscom in the Kroger Shopping Center.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
One of the toughest cases for law enforcement to solve is one where a decomposed body is found and no identification is located. If it is a male body, they are often simply referred to as John Doe. If it is a female body, they are referred to as Jane Doe. This case involves the death of someone who we can only refer to as Jane Doe. It was November 14th, 2007, when Officer Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department discovered the body of Jane Doe. At the time, Officer Hayes was searching for the body of another unrelated murder victim, Nikki Cicino. As Officer Hayes was searching the woods off of Hollandale Road, he made a grisly discovery. He saw what first appeared to be animal bones. Upon closer examination, the remains were identified as being human. The body was badly decomposed. No identification was found, and the face was unidentifiable. She became Jane Doe. Jane Doe had some jewelry with her, including an Avon necklace with cats on it. She also had a ring with amber and emerald-colored stones. Experts believe that her body had been in the field between 4 and 6 months. Detectives immediately took steps to try to identify Jane Doe. Forensic experts produced renderings of what they believed Jane Doe looked like. In 2008, the University of Tennessee created a sculpted bust. Detectives also had a three-dimensional computer-generated rendering of the face of Jane Doe. As a result of all the hard work of the law enforcement officers and the dedicated forensic scientists, the following information has been assembled. At the time of her death, Jane Doe is believed to have been between 25 and 45 years of age. She was between 5'2" and 5'9". Her race has not been confirmed. She did have a lot of dental work, and her death was a homicide. The cause of her death was a gunshot wound. The Laverne Police Department has worked tirelessly to try to identify the body of Jane Doe. Her x-rays have been sent to dentists around the state. Laverne investigators have also received assistance from the FBI, as well as national missing people databases. As of today, the identity of Jane Doe is unknown. The person or persons responsible for her death remain at large. Law enforcement once again is asking for your help. Anyone with information about the identity of Jane Doe or who may have killed her, please contact Sergeant Bob Hayes at the Laverne Police Department. The phone number is 615-793-7744. Again, we welcome back to the microphones Sergeant Bob Hayes.
Thank you.
Sergeant Hayes, when I was preparing for this particular broadcast, I wanted to get some background information, and that's where all of this information came from. But I found that if I simply put in Jane Doe Laverne into the search block, it pulls up several articles regarding her. And also it pulls up her photographs that were made of the recreations, and also photographs of the jewelry that was found. Would you encourage the listeners to do the same thing that I did by going on the internet, look at the artist renderings, and also look at the jewelry to see if they can help law enforcement?
Yes, please. Not only would I encourage everyone to do that, I would encourage them to share this information, whether it be a Google search or however search engine they use, and spread that out in the social media, whether it be Facebook or Twitter, whatever means they have to help spread this message and actually kind of get this information out there, so someone somewhere may be able to identify who this person might be.
Detective Hayes, I know that you've been involved in this case since November of 2007. Can you tell the listeners how a case like this impacts a police officer?
It's one of the worst cases I can imagine actually being involved with, because you have a person who's obviously been a victim of a crime, but on the other end of the spectrum, you know that there's family and friends out there somewhere that don't know where their loved one or friend is, has not had any contact with them, and doesn't have any idea of closure or what might have happened to that person. So it's very important to kind of complete the circle. And not only do we want to find out who the person is, we want to be able to notify the loved ones and friends of that person as to what has happened, and then go from there and be able to identify, locate, and bring to justice the person responsible.
I've looked at the efforts from reading the internet that the Laverne Police Department has gone to try to identify her. I was particularly impressed by the fact that there was actually an electronic billboard utilized. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, sir. We had recently, within the last couple of years, there's been an electronic billboard that's been put up within the city limits of Laverne. And for, I think, roughly a month's worth of time, we actually utilized that space on the billboard and put a flyer up with the rendering of what the female may look like in an effort to reach out to the public for assistance.
Okay. And I believe that General Weitzel may have some questions for you.
Okay.
Concerning the investigation, and particularly the dental area.
Sergeant Hayes, of course, the viewers can't see it, but you've got the rendering that of Jane Doe that the forensic experts have been able to put together. And I recall back, I believe it was the mid-80s, we had a similar situation here where a skull was found in the battlefield, and at that time that was sent to Dr. William Bass at the University of Tennessee, and they were able to construct and put a face on that particular skull, and we ultimately confirmed the identity. So we're hoping for some type of success as a result of that. Did you participate in the watching how they do this or understand the process they go through?
Well, General, actually on this is kind of a unique circumstance. That's been done twice. The first time was sometime in 2008, roughly with a year after the discovery of the remains. That was done at UT Knoxville. And then in 2012, I made contact with the FBI, the VICAP program. They recommended me contact a place in LSU. I contacted them and actually took the remains myself down to there and actually spent a whole day down there in their lab, learned all about the process, and helped participate in that somewhat, at least learned how that was done. And then we got a full report on that. So we actually have two different renderings. One by UT was done, like once again, in 2008. The one in 2012 by LSU has a little bit. It's the one where the actual 3D comparison was done on the computer. Also, one other difference was that I was able to take hair samples that we do have with me down to LSU, and it gives just a little bit different appearance. So we've got actually two different photographs that hopefully, if one of them may be a fairly good representation of what the victim looks like, if not something in between those.
Well, also in cases where we have bodies that have decomposed, you're aware that dentistry plays a big role in that, and I believe this individual's dental records have been sent out across the state or to various dentists in an effort to try to identify who the person is.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we do have extensive dental records of as far as the X-rays that were taken. They were sent out. It was also entered into NCIC, and there are several. The hygiene was not kept up on a yearly basis by the victim. She lacked in dental care over the years, and that would be something that hopefully would be obvious to a relative or a friend.
Well, I know in my years of being in the district attorney's office that I've come to appreciate the work that these forensic scientists do. I've had the opportunity to sit in the home with Dr. Bass and watch him assemble a skull and determine the type of wound and whether it was a gunshot wound. It's amazing what they can do. I also have to put in a plug here for my good friend, Dr. Mike Tabor, who is a forensic dentist who works in trying to identify the remains of people and has been instrumental in several cases and will be at our cold case seminar that's upcoming. I talked to him, I believe it was, or I got a voicemail from him, and he and Dr. Bass are putting on a seminar. I believe it's going to be in May. I'm not sure the exact date, but hopefully the law enforcement from this community can send some officers to that training because it's invaluable. And I just want to thank you for all you've done in this case.
Thank you.
As we end the program, we want to thank all of the guests for appearing today. We appreciate WGNS providing the airtime. And most of all, we thank all of the listeners. Our next scheduled broadcast is Friday morning, April the 4th, between 8 and 9 a.m. We leave by saying, a safe community is a responsibility of each and every one of us. For Bill Weitzel, this is Paul Newman, bidding you all a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.